Welcome into this edition of the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. I'm Ryan Labner, soon to be joined by my colleague Rex Hoggard, who is on site for the Northern Trust, the kickoff event for the FedEx Cup playoffs. The final time that the Northern Trust will be played is transitioning next year into the FedEx St. Jude Championship, which will be the first of three legs for the FedEx Cup playoffs. But before we get into all that, we're going to talk Kevin Kisner's win at the Wyndham, what it means for his Ryder Cup status, as well as doing something we used to do on Morning Drive, RIP, and that is the FedEx Cup Playoffs player draft. Rex and I will be drafting players, seven-man teams. We'll keep track over the next 3 weeks who has the most points, and we will determine some sort of fun, zany prize for the winner and or punishment for the loser. But before we get into all that, message from our sponsor in Callaway. And Kevin Kisner showed why this ain't no hobby with his unforgettable finish at the Wyndham Championship. Kisner hit some clutch shots down the stretch and rolled in the winning birding putt to come out on top in a six-man playoff. It's another big win for Callaway. Their staff pros have now won 10 times on the PGA Tour in 2021, led, of course, by Jon Rahm's win at the U.S. Open and Phil Mickelson's victory at the PGA Championship. Plus, Xander Schauffele captured that unforgettable gold medal just a couple of weeks ago at the Tokyo Olympics. Now, for more on all of these players' tour success this year, please visit CallawayGolf.com. Rex, you are in New Jersey. Even though it is warm, you are wearing a windbreaker because, as you said before we started this podcast, it's about a about a three-club wind inside the Northern Trust Media Center. What's the vibe like at Liberty National?
You know what? It's the last one, so it's a little weird. As you pointed out, we transitioned to a new playoff event that'll be moving to Memphis, and that'll be an entirely different feel, and I'm sure you'll put your claws on that one very, very quickly, because as much as you enjoyed the barbecue when you were there, and I'm sure your cholesterol enjoyed it as well. How you feeling, actually, after Memphis? It's been 2 weeks. You doing all right?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I did not have any pork last week. I'm all porked out. I am going to fire up the grill and have some pork chops today. That'll be the first time I have pork in a good week and a half. But actually, I think next year I want to put in for the BMW in Delaware. Delaware is one of the few states that I actually haven't been to. Wilmington Country Club is hosting next year's BMW. I love the second playoff event too. It's 70 players. The waves are separated by about 2 hours. You get to sleep in, which by that point I'll be having two kids under the age of four. That sounds very appealing to me.
All yours. You can take that one. No fight for me on that one. Delaware? No, thank you.
Rex, one of your boys, Kiz, was a winner at the Wyndham Championship six-man playoff. Poor Scotty. Poor Adam Scott. I had a great conversation with him in Memphis. He's just talking about how he wanted his year to be over. And then he somehow, he's on the FedEx Cup bubble and he works his way into contention, plays well again on Sunday, and then has 4 feet and doesn't even hit the hole. Doesn't even hit the hole from 4 feet, pretty much opening the door for Kevin Kisner. A, what were your thoughts on that victory? And B, most pressingly, now with 3 weeks until U.S. Ryder Cup captain Steve Stricker makes his pick, do you think this immediately launches Kevin Kisner on the radar for a wild card pick?
The victory puts it's quintessential Kevin Kisner, right? I mean, back-to-back 66s on the weekend to close. He birdies two of his last three holes, as you pointed out. I mean, it's just a clutch performance. And when he's playing his best, you can absolutely count on these types of clutch performances. You wanted to transition to the Ryder Cup, which is, by the way, we're 2 weeks away from the deadline for that. So that comes after the BMW. But unless they're going to change to where the matches are played this year and they're going to move it to Colonial or Sea Island or Sedgefield, one of these ball striking sort of ball control courses where he's had success, I just don't see it. It moved up 23rd on the U.S. points list, which is respectable when you consider that, all right, Captain Stricker's got six picks. He's got a little wiggle room. I just don't. When you start going down the list, there's too many names that you can't pass over to get all the way to 23rd and the right to pick Kevin Kisner. As much as I would love that bulldog, both theoretically and in real life, obviously that's why the big Georgia sign is behind you. As much as I love him and I think he'd be great for that team, I just right now, unless he does something special over these next 2 weeks, I don't see how you pass over. We can go down the name, but do you pass over Jordan Spieth? Do you pass over Patrick Reed? Do you pass over Patrick Cantlay or Daniel Berger or Tony Finau? I mean, those are hard guys to ignore. I have a hard time. Which one of those was a yes? All of them?
Tony Finau, that's a no-brainer for me. But look, we can
– You know he was the highlight of the U.S. team in Paris. There weren't many highlights, and Tony was pretty much it.
Those highlights are basically covered in dust because that was 3 years ago. I could care less how a player played 3 years ago in the Ryder Cup. And look, I do think it is interesting, and I'm not sure if this was really the byproduct of friend of the program Riggs from Barstool. He admittedly sent out a drunken tweet on Saturday night of the Wyndham Championship, basically stumping for Kevin Kisner as a Ryder Cup pick. Then Kisner goes out and wins, and it does seem like that has filtered into the thinking that you know, forget what has happened in 2021. Kis just won a tournament. He is basically the antithesis to everything that is wrong with Team USA over the past two decades, right? Like, he's got a chill demeanor in a team room that's full of divas. He's a great putter. He seems to live for these types of moments. He's confrontational. Like, we kind of like that. But I don't think you can necessarily discount the way that he's played. This was just his third top 10 of 2021. And to his credit, he has trended nicely over these past couple of months. He's all of those top 10s have come in the past 2 or 3 months, especially since the Travelers Championship. He's starting to putt again, like the Kevin Kisner that we know he's capable of. But and you kind of touched on it there, Rex. The question really boils down to, are there six better options for the Americans when it comes to wild card picks? And so, yes, the team will be finalized in 2 weeks. We can basically assume that it's going to look like it does right now. So that, in which case, you would have potential captain's picks being Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, Harris English. I think those three players are locks to make the team as wild card picks. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I would say no, agree.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then I would say Patrick Cantlay is a semi-lock. He won the Memorial after John Rahm, WD'd. He is the ninth-ranked player in the world. He is a ready-made partner for Xander Schauffele. They have had some success together, including the 2019 President's Cup. Patrick Cantlay, semi-lock, yes or no?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Daniel Berger has been one of the most consistent players on the PGA Tour. He has one of the most well-rounded games. He's continued to play well all summer. And yes, he was on that 2017 President's Cup team, the one that Kisner is on, that everyone's looking back to and saying how well he played there. Daniel Berger, semi-lock, agree or disagree?
Not quite. I mean, we're splitting hairs now, but it wouldn't be quite the level that Patrick Cantlay is at. But yes, I think Stricker's probably leaning towards him.
Partial lock, let's call it.
Let's call it.
Okay, yeah, I think he'd be popular, certainly among that high school class of 2011 crowd with JT and Jordan Spieth. He does share an instructor in Cam McCormick with Jordan Spieth. It'd be interesting to see that if they would potentially partner up as well. They played a bunch of practice rounds together. So all of a sudden, Rex, you have whittled down the list of contenders to basically just one spot. If you assume that a partial lock like Daniel Berger will be on the team, and I would be shocked if he's left off, you basically have just one spot left. And so are you looking at a Webb Simpson, who also had a chance to win in Wyndham? He's kind of been playing peacemaker over the past couple of Ryder Cups, whether he's been partnering with Patrick Reed, Bubba Watson. I mean, he's kind of that guy who's going to fall on the sword for the team. He's a good putter, a good iron player. To me, he would seem to be getting the edge over any of these other players. I like Scottie Scheffler a lot. For a player who hasn't won, he needs to do something over these next couple of weeks, I would think, to get on that team. Will Zalatoris is basically the same player to me as Scottie Scheffler. Same boat. Tony Finau has not done anything since February, so it's hard to imagine, even with his length, that he can be a serious contender for that pick. And then what are you looking at? Kokrak, he'd be another rookie. Do you really want to go down the Phil Mickelson route, who has one top 20 since Kiowa? I wouldn't even consider that, to be honest with you. Sam Burns, he'd be another rookie. I mean, well, the list of contenders gets pretty narrow. So to me, it almost is like a Kisner Webb discussion. And to me, I'd lean Webb.
Again, I think you're glossing over. You sort of dismissed Tony Finau head to head when it comes to
what has he done? What has he done?
I mean, compared to Kevin Kisner, since that's where you wanted to put it, they both played 25 events. Tony has made 4 more cuts and has 3 more top 10 finishes. You wanted to point out he hasn't done anything since February. He's only had top 10s in both the Masters and the PGA since February. So you like to gloss over stats and make them say what you want them to say. And no, he doesn't have a win this season, and you can probably pick that apart. But Tony has been on these teams before. Tony was the highlight of the Paris loss. If you want to put dust on that, that's fine with me. And again,
I didn't even know there was a highlight of the Paris loss.
Tony and Brooks Koepka were it. That's it. And maybe the
JT played great in Paris.
He played great on Sunday. I'll give him that. The Sunday singles match was about the only inspired match I saw. And the Saturday uniforms for the U.S. team were pretty impressive too. So I would put those 3 things as the only highlights of that and the plane ride home or the 12 plane ride.
What about that Italian dish we had out on, was it Tuesday night? It was delicious. That would be one of the highlights.
And I spent 4 days in Paris with my wife afterwards. That was a highlight as well.
That was a low light. Let's be honest.
That was a complete highlight of my life. And I'm going to stick to that because my wife never listens to this podcast anyway. So I don't know why you want to dismiss Tony. I'm going to agree with you on Webb. And here's why. Steve Stricker has some team room issues. He's got some chemistry issues he's going to have to deal with. He's got Brooks and Bryson. He's going to probably have to come up with lockers in 2 separate rooms for those 2. Because as Brooks put it, I can put up with anybody for a week. And that's the most backhanded compliment I've ever heard in my entire life. That's, yes, I can stand to look at him for an entire week without saying one word to him. So he's going to have to figure out how to keep those 2 in the same room. He's going to have to figure out how to get Patrick Reed a partner. He's got some landmines he's got to tiptoe around. Webb Simpson is the person he can get to tiptoe around that. Because we've seen it time and time and time again. Webb's record in these events isn't great, and because he has to, I shouldn't say this as someone who was in the Marines, but he has to fall on that grenade so many times in his career because he gets in these team rooms. He's the nicest guy in the room, and who's going to play with Patrick Reed? Webb, you got the short straw on this one. So I would lean in that direction. But no, I think it's such a stretch. And this is not an argument against Kevin Kisner. As you pointed out, he's one of my boys. I'm in the bag for him. I just you don't go over all of these different players, including Tony, including Webb, to get all the way to 23. That being said, he gets to 15. He gets somewhere inside that top 15. By the time we're done after the BMW Championship, yes, this is a conversation I'd love to have with Riggs, because I do think he would be a valuable asset to that team. But right now I would go with Webb.
I agree with you, Rex. And I actually think Stricker is in a very strong position. I think a couple of months ago, I was maybe a little, I was actually thinking he was probably having a little bit of heartburn thinking of how he was going to fill out this team. Oh. It's basically falling into place for him. And now he can sit back over these next 3 weeks and just see who goes and grabs that final spot. To me, I really do think those 5 spots are already taken care of. And so let's say Tony plays well, and he has played well in the playoffs historically. Let's say Tony plays well, or if Webb continues to play well, or if Kisner really does get hot and plays all the way through the Tour Championship and continues to play well, he can just take that guy and you can justify it. And the reason why I say he's in a strong position is because all of these players that we're mentioning, the Tony Finaus, the Webb Simpsons, the Kevin Kisners, maybe even a Scottie Scheffler, all of those guys would be specialists. It's not like they're coming in and being asked to play 4 or 5 times. In all likelihood, Webb is just going to be a alternate shot partner, or Finau is just going to be a 4 balls player, or Kisner is going to be an alternate shot player because of his consistency and his accuracy. It's not like they're going to be thrown to the wolves and playing 4 or 5 times. So they're basically just going to be needed to count on here in bursts probably 2 times before you get to Sunday singles. So yeah, I think any of those players conceivably could give you 2 or 3 points, probably two points you're going to get from any of those players. And I think that's all Stricker's looking for with his 12th and final pick. Now, I want to transition, Rex, since you are on site here for the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Did you ever do this when we had the old morning drive? Were you ever a part of this show where it was basically, it's fantasy football season. And you know, I'm a diehard with these drafts, and the draft is the most important and most fun day of the entire fantasy season, where we'd go around the desk and pick our teams for the playoffs. You were part of that, right?
Yeah, I was actually in the field a couple of times. So they would bring me in the Scheffler role, yes. But yes, I was part of a couple of these drafts.
Yeah. So you were in the Scheffler role. And I think I was in like the Mel Kiper role because they would just come to me and I would just dump on who's ever picked. Like they picked Jason Day third and I would just absolutely slaughter them. So I wanna do that. Even though this is not a visual medium, we can try and sell it the best we can. And so how this is going to work, Rex, is it's going to be a snake draft. We're not gonna do auction style. We're gonna do a snake draft. That means you or I make the first pick, then you get two in a row, then I make two in a row, you make two in a row until we fill out the 7-man roster. What we're going to do is keeping track of the points is too confusing. So just
forget you're about not it. Checking the chat, by the way, before we get to the draft, I did want to touch on Phil's match on Tuesday.
I'm not checking the chat. No.
All right. Before we get to the draft, I did want to just check in. Fine. That was probably, and this is such a weird thing because it was so contrived and I know exactly what these four players are doing. And I just went out and called it the PIP Invitational yesterday because they're just trying to bounce up whatever their meltwater score is or whatever their Q rating is.
What's a meltwater story? You mean a meltwater score. Mention?
A meltwater score is what I said, but mention is what I think it actually means. So all of those five things that combined. And but I will give them style points. Anything that gets me out of the media center on a Tuesday just to go watch a practice round. And I'll actually give Bill credit for motivating me to walk this group. This is one of the coolest and meanest and douchiest things I think I've ever seen on the golf course. He walked up to everybody on the first tee, and it's for those who don't know, it's Joel Dahman and Phil Mickelson are a team, and they're playing Harry Higgs and Keith/Kevin Mitchell, which is the way Phil referred to him in all the tweets, because he live tweeted this for all the world to see, which is another backhanded slap. But Phil walks up to all three of them on the tee, and he goes, I'm playing a Callaway golf ball. I'm playing a Callaway with a jumping knee on it. And everyone kind of glances down. And of course, it's the logo. And he goes, I that's what I did when I won the Masters. What are you guys playing? And there was nothing anyone could say. It's Titleist One, whatever, Bridgestone Two. I mean, what are they going to say? Like, Harry goes, when we talked to Harry about this yesterday, he said, I thought I was ready. I thought I could do this. And he goes, on the first tee, he just sends this haymaker. And I have nothing I can say. I just have to laugh and take it. And he goes, the rest of the day was just me taking those kind of backhanded, subtle sort of jabs that I had to take.
Phil has a lot of contrived ideas. And basically, anytime he opens his mouth now in a public setting, you have to wonder if there's some sort of agenda that's attached to it. But when it comes to these like made-for-TV exhibitions that we've seen now with the match, or with just this practice round grouping that you're calling the PIP Invitational. I mean, there is no one better than Phil. He seems to rise to the challenge often. It's not like he's slapping it around. His one-liners, which I'm sure he's been working on for weeks, come off very well prepared. He just really relishes the role of entertainer that I think a lot of these young players either don't have the experience or the desire to. You know, they're just kind of automatons who are going through the process. Like Phil has actually relished the role of entertainer. And so I'm going to put you on the spot here. Assuming that Phil is going to be a member of this foursome, who else would you want to see Phil in a match against on the PGA Tour on any given Tuesday?
I think that foursome was pretty cool. I mean, anybody that knows the personality, we all know that Joel's got a great personality.
But they already played. I want a new one. Give me a new one.
There was a second line. I'll give you a new one. There was a second line because there was an issue because Kevin Mitchell was going to ring the closing bell at the New York Stock Exchange yesterday afternoon. So he kind of made an announcement on the first tee that we got to be done by 2:00. And Gino, who is Joel Dahman's caddy, he announces so everyone can hear it'll be over by then. And it actually was over. The Phil and Joel won 3-2, I believe, was the final score.
How much money was on the line?
There was no talk about it. I was heard it's enough. It was enough. It was fair from what Harry said. He said the hard thing was that they pressed after they lost on 17 and then they lost the press. So they essentially lost the bet and then a half. So they lost 1.5 times the bet. I mean, but he said it was fine. He said the only hard part was taking the money out of my pocket and putting it into his pocket because that's the only hard part.
I mean, Kevin/Keith Mitchell said that he went to the ATM. He had to go to the ATM 3 times. So to me, I was starting to run the math on that. I believe if I go to the ATM, I have a $5,000 limit to withdraw. I believe that's the case. And so if Kevin slash Keith Mitchell is like me, which I'm not sure why he would be since he has millions in the bank account and I do not, five times three would be $15,000. Do you think that's a reasonable guess in how much they were playing for?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably right. Because, I mean, you look, Phil wants to play for whatever makes you uncomfortable. And for the four tour player, that's going to make them uncomfortable. I mean, $15 is going to make you and I uncomfortable. But in this particular case, yeah. But to answer your question, I think anything that involves any combination of Brooks and Bryson being on separate teams, you can throw Phil in there all you want and then DJ for fun or Patrick Reed if you want a little bit more edginess to it. But I think anything that would involve Brooks and Bryson.
You think Brooks would actually be good in that setting? To me, like he's great. He's great on Twitter because he can sit there and marinate and find the perfect GIF or find the perfect wording. And it's just like an absolute kill shot. Like it's just sport to him where he's just sitting there waiting. And then poor innocent Bryson comes into his scope and Brooks just takes him out. I'm not sure he would actually be good in like a 4 hour 18 hole showdown. I don't think he has that personality.
And I don't think Bryson's good at trash talking, period. Like even if you gave him a 5 minute head start, just watching the match and what he tried to do with Tom Brady on that first tee, it was awkward. And it just sort of defines Bryson as sort of this socially awkward person. He's kind of a golf nerd, nice enough guy, but you don't put yourself in with the wolves in that situation. But that's what would be so entertaining, because he's going to get roasted, because Phil is probably going to roast both of them along the way just to have fun at their own expense, regardless of who's on his team and who isn't on his team. I just think you add those two elements to it and it would be wildly entertaining.
I'd love to see Max Homa. He was the only one missing from the Pip Invitational. If you really want to go straight Pip, I think JT of the younger generation is the best trash talker. And I don't think it's particularly close. I'm trying to think of who else would be.
I mean, Lee Westwood is a sneaky, good, subtle trash talker. You'd have to turn the mics up and really pay attention. But I think he would be fun if you wanted to add a European.
I think Rory's pretty quick on his feet.
But I don't think he would, like, he's not going to bring the edge like Phil brings the edge. Phil brings the knife, and you just don't realize it. Everyone else is bringing the spork to the knife fight, and Phil's got you beat before you step to the first tee. You're right. It's obvious he had sat around and thought about, I need 18 lines.
He's been workshopping those so hard over the past couple of weeks, and good for him. He hasn't been playing worth a lick. He might as well be practicing them.
Yeah. So I would take that, but it was an entertaining Tuesday on tour. We don't get that very often. I wanted to touch on that before we go to the draft. All right. You going to flip the coin? Flip the coin.
Yeah. Can we finally get to the draft now that I spent 3 minutes setting it up? People probably don't even remember the rules. All right. Call heads or tails.
Ready? Heads.
Yep. Ooh, heads it is. Heads it is.
Audio medium. Not sure I won the first pick, actually, but all right.
And you have to explain your pick, of course, since we are a golf analyst.
Yes, we are a golf analyst. I actually started going through this because you're not going to believe this, but I'm so invested in my fantasy football draft this year. I've actually done 2 mock drafts already to prepare for my fantasy football team this year. And after learning through the last 3 or 4 seasons, I will not take a quarterback before the 5th round. That's apropos of nothing. For our draft.
No, right you either want one of the first two or you want to wait.
Every mock draft rookies. I saw had the first quarterback always went in the 5th round, and it was always QB1, which would be
Mahomes.
Yeah, Mahomes. Yeah. So that I'm not going to do that. I think right off the top, and this was tough, I'm not sure I wanted the first pick, but I just think historically on this golf course, you look at kind of how he's played. I'm going to go with Morikawa just off the top.
Colin Morikawa is your first pick.
Yes.
He is the leader.
He's the FedEx Cup leader, standings. But beyond that, I just like his – I think he's in form. He's the type of player I think that can play all of these golf courses that are stacking up the next few weeks, Cays Valley next week, and certainly Eastland.
Yeah, Cays Valley is going to be an unknown for everyone in the field, the
great golf
BMW Championship in Maryland. All right, I was not expecting you to take Morikawa, and so I'm happy that you did. I'm going to go – so I've got 2 picks here.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with John Rahm, who is making his first start this week in 4 weeks. You asked him about it yesterday at the press conference. He talked about it. The COVID diagnosis, the second COVID diagnosis, certainly took him by surprise. Didn't know how he got, but he was very disappointed to miss the Olympics. I think he comes in fresher than basically every single player in the field. And I think he'll be strong all the way to the finish line of this PGA Tour season. So I'm taking John Rahm. Let me see here. I'm going to take Jordan Spieth.
Of course you are.
For my next, I was kind of waffling between two players.
No explanation needed. Everyone knows why you took Jordan Spieth.
Well, yeah, obviously I love Jordan, but the fact that he's won at Eastlake doesn't hurt either. All right, two picks for you.
John Rahm, that hurts. I was kind of waffling. That's a pretty good one for all the reasons you pointed out. JT seems to play this golf course well, so I'm going to go with Justin Thomas. And he seems to play the playoffs well for some reason. This sort of sparks
an interest. He has not had a great year, Rex. If you take away his weekend at the Players Championship, it's been, in his own words, a very disappointing year.
And he didn't play well at the Olympics either. I mean, that was a wild disappointment. I'm kind of banking on him doing something special, and I'm not quite sure if that's a safe bank. This one, and this is a head versus heart deal. I normally would not take him because I don't think he's had that great of the year, but he plays this particular golf course so well. I'm going to go with DJ for my third pick.
Ah, that's a good pick.
That's all that needs to be said.
I mean, the defending FedEx Cup champion. What did he go last year? I mean, I covered the Northern Trust last year. Didn't he win by 11?
Yes.
Like 31 under par.
TPC Boston, wildly different golf course, but he has played really well here in the past. He's won here, so yeah.
Yeah, I do think an interesting note on DJ. He is 17th heading into the playoffs. That's his worst starting position since 2012. So you're clearly banking on a return to form for DJ. With my next pick, I'm going to go – I have a little bit of hesitation with it, but I'm going to take Xander. Yeah. I'm going to take Xander Schauffele with my next pick.
That's a good one.
Won the Tour Championship back in 2017 when JT won. He had the lowest score of any player last year, so he was credited in the official World Golf Ranking with a victory at Eastlake. He seems to have hit the reset button after the Olympics. I'm still a little bit worried about a hangover. He was certainly had the Olympic hangover in Memphis, but I think with kind of a week to reset, his dad, Stefan, certainly seems more excited about the Olympic gold medal than Xander does. I think he'll be just fine during this three event stretch. And let's see for my next one. Okay. This is the one I was haggling over, Rex, and I'm glad that he's actually available for me. I'm going to take Brooks.
Ooh.
It's a little bit of a question mark because if there's not a major trophy at stake, he admittedly struggles to get up for these. Even talked to him in Memphis where $1.9 million is going to the winner. And he said he wasn't sure how he was going to motivate himself. If you can't get motivated this time of year for $15 million, like something's wrong with you. I like Brooks here. He's 15th in points. He should be safe for Eastlake, barring a miscut and a 70th place finish, I would think, at the BMW. So I'm gonna take Brooks.
Probably not. Well, the points thing and where they're at on the list right now is the tricky part, because the guy I wanted to go to next, I probably wrestled with for the exact same reasons, is Rory. And not Sabatini, the other Rory, not the one that won the silver medal, Rory McIlroy. And the reason why he's 26 on the points list right now, however,
he's got to play well.
Yeah, but I just think if he gets to Eastlake, I like his chances. Like, there's a gear.
What if he doesn't?
That's a big what if.
You're taking a zero.
Yeah, I'm taking a big zero, and that's going to be hard. I feel like he's playing well right now, and you talk about motivation this time of season for whatever reason, and I don't think it's the money. I think it's actually leading up to the Ryder Cup, if I'm being honest. But I think there's something about this part of the year that gets them excited.
I think it's huge too, Rex. I talked to Rory in Memphis, and for the first time in nearly a year, Rory McIlroy led the field in strokes gained off the tee. The first time in nearly a year that he'd done so. When I asked him what the difference was, he said, I know you covered this event at Quail Hollow when he was trying to go exclusively to the cut off the tee. He said, forget it. I'm hitting the shot that I've hit basically my entire career. And that is a high towering draw. And it seems to have brought back the best in Rory's game. So he obviously does need to play well these next 2 weeks, but I certainly think he can do it and make a run actually at a third FedEx Cup title.
And then for my back-to-back pick, I have one more. This one, I just think just from a consistency standpoint, I mean, I haven't seen anything in the playoffs throughout his career that would lead me to believe that he's due for a big playoff. This is really just going for the numbers. Like if you're looking to pad some sort of average, this is a guy, Harris English, who I feel like he can throw a couple top tens out there. So he's going to be my fifth pick.
You think Harry's still licking his wounds from what went down in Memphis? You think that lingers at all?
I don't think it lingers because you're talking about a guy that 2 years ago didn't even qualify for the playoffs. So I think as far as perspective, I don't know that there's a player in the field that has more perspective than Harris, considering where he's at. He's fourth right now on the points list. He's virtually, well, he is a lock to make it all the way to East Lake. I just think when you look at everything he's done over these last 48 months, let's call it, there's a perspective there that most players aren't going to have.
That's fair. For my next two picks, I'm going to kind of lump them together. Both of them, well, Boog. I'm gonna go with Daniel Berger for one of my picks. Doesn't matter whether he's fifth or sixth. He is 20th, even though he's played so well. He won at Pebble. He's still just 20th, so I guess he does need to play well. And so I'm gonna go Daniel Berger and Patrick Cantlay. I put them in the same kind of category for my two picks. When you look at motivation this time of year, $15 million is not gonna do it for you. I think the fact that either semi-locks or partial locks for that Ryder Cup team. And so these are guys who are motivated to play well this time of year. Patrick Cantlay, his caddy, Matt Minister, still dealing with some COVID effects. He was not in Memphis. There he had Joe Skavron, Ricky Fowler's normal caddy. This week he's going to have Joe LaCava, Tiger Woods caddy, on the bag. So for my fifth and sixth picks, Daniel Berger and Patrick Cantlay. Your thoughts, please.
I like both those. And again, I think you lumped them in fairly. And I would put them almost in the Harris English category, where at this point in time, you need innings, you need points. They're going to give you both of those things. I do think it's interesting that up to this point, and my guess is until we're finished, we're both dancing around Bryson DeChambeau, who is squarely seventh on the FedEx Cup points list. And neither one of us have any interest in diving in on that. But it's such a minefield. You're not going to touch that one.
Are you taking him with your sixth pick?
No, absolutely not. I think it's entertaining that both of us are just trying to dance around it. We don't even want to mention his name. It's, yeah, no, thank you. I'm going to keep moving in the other direction.
I mean, he's coming off a pretty good performance in Memphis. Obviously, he had a forgettable Sunday like Harris English did as well. The fact that he doesn't have a top 10 at East Lake does not bode well for his FedEx Cup fortunes. A golf course next week at Caves Valley that he and others have never seen before. The amount of learning that he's going to have to do with a brand new caddy. No thanks for Bryson.
And there's some demons here at Liberty National. This is where things really started to at least publicly unravel between he and Brooks with the slow play thing a few years ago. So this isn't a great place. So Jersey City and the Statue of Liberty sort of looking out over him. It does not bring good, warm, fuzzy memories for Bryson. I'm going to continue to dance around them. I just wanted to point that out. And I'm going to put these two together, although it is important to make sure I point out which one of these I pick first. So Matsuyama is going to be my sixth pick. He is coming off a solid finish. Really, if you go all the way back to the Olympics, I think he's
played. Two back-to-back playoff losses, Rex.
I know. So I think Matsuyama is another guy that I don't know that he's due. I wouldn't use that word, but I feel pretty content with where I'm taking him in the draft, maybe is the best way to put it. And Victor Hovland with my last pick.
Are you kidding me?
Because he's a guy, I can't believe you let him slide this far. Because, like, I figured you would go him, Jordan, JT, is how I figured you would draft. So I'm doing that for no other reason than I'm stealing him from you.
Well, that's literally who I just looked up and had just penciled in. Now I have to pivot, and I don't like to pivot because I had him penciled. That is a curveball, Rex. So I'm going to take... See, I didn't like this.
Bryson, just do it. Just pick him. Just
come on. I'm going to take Scottie Scheffler. Gonna take Scotty Scheffler. I'm taking him over Patrick Reed. I like Patrick Reed a lot in that position. He was the last winner at Liberty National in 2019, if you'll recall. He historically has not played East Lake well, but the last 2 years he has top tens. I just think Scotty shows up. Big lights. He's not afraid of the stage. I know he hasn't won yet. He's 21st in the standings, despite not having a victory. Played the playoffs well last year in his first opportunity. Shot that 59, of course, in the playoff opener.
You're
then finished
trying to convince yourself at this point.
But yeah, I mean, I don't feel great about it. But I'm gonna round out my team with Scotty. I think he should be golden to make it back to East Lake, and he's another guy who is trying to play well.
You know what's funny is as I look at my team, the only pick I'm not happy with is Morikawa at number one. I should have gone Rahm. I wanted to go Rahm. I panicked. It's what I do in every draft.
I mean, I did. You can see on my list here. This is basically what I do for fantasy football. Is I do it more sophisticated for that because it's much more important to me. But I make like my own power rankings and I just kind of cross the guys off. And so when I have my own ranking list, it's easy. You could just make your selection that way. I didn't have Morikawa 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I had Morikawa 8th on my list.
No, I like his consistency. He probably should have been a number one pick. I knew I wanted Rahm, and I don't. Again, this is what I do in every fantasy football draft. I panic if I get a good pick, whether if it's 1 or 10. Because now my mind is like spinning. I never have a good plan when I go into these things.
And we're still waiting for the disastrous outcome year, Rex, where a guy like wins the Grand Slam or he wins 8 or 9 times during the PGA Tour season. And then he gets to East Lake. He's been the undisputed best player all season long. And yet he has just a 2-shot lead. Then that guy rope hooks it out of bounds. And all of a sudden his advantage that he's gained throughout the entire year has been lost. We're still waiting for that disastrous scenario. I think you've come around on staggered start format at East Lake, have you not?
I don't know that I've come around on it. I've actually done some radio shows this week where I find myself not sticking up for what they've done, but pointing out that, look, it's still a little uncomfortable. Playoff is still not the right word. Golf in this concept, I still think is a round peg in a square hole. There's no way we're ever going to get around that. That being said, we have 3 weeks of meaningful golf with the game's best players playing for something that means something to them. Whether if you think playing for $15 million is important or not.
What's that to do with the staggered start? I'm asking about the staggered start. I like the playoffs.
I like the playoffs. And look, again, there is no easy way to sit here and say, this is the way to do it. That's the way to do it. It's awkward. We're going to end up with that situation with that worst case scenario going into East. Like it was brought up yesterday to Xander Schauffele when he was asked about it, that Patrick Cantlin, he showed up, I believe he was 5th on the list and ended up finishing 23rd or 24th that week at East. Like, that's a significant drop for someone who had a really good regular season, had a good playoff up until that point, and suddenly you're bounced out of that top 5. That hurts. And I think there's part of you that is going to be able to wrap your mind around that because that's what the playoffs mean, where you have this instant gratification, either very, very good or very, very bad. But you're right. We're going to end up with that scenario. We're going to end up with a scenario that we've already had where the person that won isn't technically the person that won, and we're going to point that out year after year after year.
Okay, so there's a couple fine points we need to have for this draft, and you just mentioned it there. We're going to do this based on money earned, not points earned, correct? I mean, the points just get too confusing. Let's just have...
No, you said money. You said points right out of the gate. I say we do points.
No, I said money. Money earned per event, right?
Well, no, because the only money that's being earned at East Lake is the bonus money. There is no purse.
All right.
They call this bonus money.
All right. So we're going to do it based on points. I think there's 2,000 points awarded to the winner this week at the Northern Trust. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to, we can do money. But just so you understand, like whatever happens at East Lake is going to wildly skew. I mean,
right.
The winner at East Lake is going to win it for you.
Right. So are we going to have it based like the Xander Schauffele wins in 2020 because he has the lowest 72 hole score? Or are we going to have Dustin Johnson is the winner and you get full points for that? How do you want to do this?
Seems like we should have worked this out before we actually went on air with a live with a podcast that we're trying to do live flying by the seat of our pants here. We're probably just going to have to count money, and this is going to come down to who wins. And there's no other way to do it, because we're not going to sit here and we have to go with the winner, regardless of the staggered start and however many strokes they're going to end up being ahead. I just don't know another way to do it.
Okay, so not only at East Lake this year, are you going to see who would have won the 72-hole championship? You're also going to determine who would have won our stupid fantasy game, exactly. based on who performed well at East Lake. Okay, and what is the prize / punishment? I don't want to do, you know, just a beer at the Ryder Cup, which will be the next time I see you. That's stupid. We're on per diem. If we don't use it, we get to keep it. Like that's not punishment enough. I was thinking like a couple weeks of babysitting for me. Do you think that would be fair?
I have grown kids. How does that help me? You're going to babysit my 18-year-old?
I mean, you can think of your own prize / punishment.
Sure. We can workshop that. I was going to suggest we come up with a sign that says I'm really bad at fantasy golf. And the loser has to wear it in front of the Ryder Cup Media Center for 1 hour on Wednesday before the matches.
Oh, my. Okay.
All right.
Wait, on the first tier or in the media center?
In front of in the media center. We have to get work done, but you have to wear the sign. I suck at fantasy golf.
I'm writing this down. I suck. That seems fair. I don't think you even know how to babysit. So I'm not sure I want to entrust you with my.
No, my wife's really good with kids. We have three of them that all survive. So my wife would be very well at it.
Okay, a sign for 1 hour. That reads, I suck at fantasy golf Wednesday of actually let's do it Thursday. I'll be coming in hot on Wednesday. I can't be going to Joann Fabrics and getting materials for this sign.
Okay, that's fine. We can do it Thursday. That's fine.
Now does
and you
this
have
person
to wear it. If there's an interview during that window.
I was just gonna say that. Yeah. You have to wear it. During one of the press conferences. Steve Stricker is going to be talking about his strategy and why he's sending out player X with player Y versus on Europe's team. And we've got to wear a stupid sign that says, I suck at fantasy golf.
And if I win, you have to buy me an IPA. And if you win, I buy you whatever light, watered down beer you like to drink.
I mean, I like lawnmower beers.
Okay.
So it's a sign. So it's a sign plus a beer.
Yeah, that's it.
Sign plus a beer. Actually, if we're going up to Whistling Straits, I want to have one of those beers that Randy Mill. Yes, Spotted Cow. Man, I want a whole pitcher. I want a pitcher of that. All right, pitcher.
We can do that.
Pitcher of Spotted Cow. That's fair. Yep. All right. That was wildly entertaining. A very long podcast. I wonder if anyone is still listening at this point, but I hope they were. My team, John Rahm, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele, Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, Patrick Cantlay, Scottie Scheffler. That is absolutely loaded.
Rex's team, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Harris English, Hideki Matsuyama, and Victor Hovland.
What a bunch of losers. Okay. A bunch of losers on that squad.
We'll see. One of those 14 guys is going to win East Lake and from behind. I mean, he's going to win from seven strokes back.
Yep.
And we're going to be like, yeah, all right, this was fun.
What a stupid – this is wearing this stupid sign.
Who came up with this?
All right, Rex,
you're going to yell at us because we're wearing it in the middle of his press conference at the Ryder Cup.
Get out of here, you jokes. It's going to be broadcast live on television. We're all going to get fired. Rex, you enjoy the sports book that is on site at Liberty National. I believe the first of its kind on the PGA Tour. I do wonder if some numbskull degenerate gambler is going to scream out in the 72nd hole and alter – the outcome of the Northern Trust, but we'll just have to wait and see. Thanks
Spoiler
for joining
alert,
us. Look
that's
forward.
Next week's podcast.
Yeah, I can't. I look forward to recapping that one from the BMW. We'll both be home for that one. All right, for Rex, I'm Ryan. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. We'll talk to you guys next week, and make sure to keep an eye on my team.